The football season is almost here. This is Warren Sharp, and here at Sharp Football Analysis, there is no dead season. We've been working literally for months writing our 2022 football preview, and I will promise you this. This book is the fastest way for you to get smart for the upcoming season, period. I'm going to give you $5 off right now. It's not offered anywhere else to use on your copy. This book is over 550 pages, full color, and previews all 32 NFL teams. It's got comprehensive fantasy football analysis. It's got every single line and total for every single game that's going to be played this upcoming season, all the way through to week 18. It's got forecasted win totals. It's got betting advice. It's got predictions for the upcoming season and so much more. We're talking deep dives into all 32 teams and much, much more. There is simply nothing like this preview in the industry, and I can promise you that. So order your copy right now at sharpfootballanalysis.com and use coupon code ANGLES. That is A-N-G-L-E-S. Use coupon code ANGLES and you will save $5 off your price. Go over to sharpfootballanalysis.com and pick up your copy today.
What is going on, Sharp Football family? It is the resident Swami of Konami, Rich Rebar, and we are here the middle of July. We are a week from rookie training camp starting. We'll see what veterans show up, but they'll be coming too. We're just, 20 days away from the Hall of Fame game. It is closing in quick. Real quick housekeeping notes. The book is done. The 2022 Sharp Football Preview. It's out. You can go get it on the site. It's 600 pages of the most detailed preview you can check out this offseason. You know, Warren, Dan Pizzuta, Ryan McChrystal, Curtis Hirsch, Tucker Bagley, myself pour tons of hours into this project. We believe you will not be disappointed in the content you can see from a team-by-team performance, personal and coaching changes, defensive player breakdowns, rookie draft class impacts, injuries, fantasy, gobs and gobs of data you can derive your own opinions from. If you hate our personal analysis that we add in text, definitely go check that out. We'll drop the link in the description here on the podcast. It's a yearly staple for us at Sharp Football. Definitely, you know, please support us. Please check that out. With that housekeeping out of the way, we love guests that make us smarter as real football fans. Go back and check out Matthew Betts a week ago, talking about key injuries heading into the season. I had to double up on Matthews too as well. We have another guest that's going to make us smarter, and it's going to be when it comes to wide receiver play. We brought in Matt Harmon, the all-father of wide receiver play. He is Mike Evans endorsed. This man pours in hours and hours of research. Matt, what's going on, brother?
Yeah, I mean, there's no shortage of Matthews to choose from in the fantasy industry. I mean, even, when I got started, it was like, wow, there's obviously Matthew Berry, big news on him, you know, in the last couple of weeks. Matt Waldman, all these folks. So there's no shortage of Matts here in the industry. So I appreciate you picking me to follow up the great Matthew Betts. Thank you so much for that. Now, it's always good to jump on with you, Rich. You know, we've been doing this for a long time, and we've talked about all handfuls of players, guys that have worked out, guys that haven't worked out. It's been a lot of fun over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, me and you go back to like fledgling, you know, Twitter football analysis, you know, days when you were at, you know, Backyard Banter and, you know, football guys, all that stuff. We've been internet friends, humble brag, for a long time. And we've got to do a lot of these shows together. And I always love having you on because you always, you know, either reinforce takes I had or give me a new angle to look at things, not just from a fantasy perspective, but a real life perspective, because I genuinely care about watching the football games and care about the operations of, you know, how football is played, because that's going to lead me to be a better, you know, gambler, fantasy football player, et cetera. And we do have a nice overlap at Sharp Football Analysis, you know, not just, this isn't just a fantasy, you know, feed. We have real football analysis and betting. And, you know, so have opening up what you do at Reception Perception to a wider audience, I think, is something that everyone can kind of gain from, and not just fantasy football players. So definitely we have some people here that I'm sure are hearing you for the first time. I know that seems hard to believe, but it is true. So why don't you just lay out kind of the concept of Reception Perception, what it is, how you arrived at doing this. I mean, I know some people have heard this story as well, but I feel like it's important that you get kind of this out early and let everyone know kind of where we're going to be taking things.
Sure. I mean, I think the way you said it, you know, kind of about yourself and how you view football is a great, great kind of introduction to reception perception, which is that I wanted to, back in the day, you know, not just like find some sort of niche and way into like the football industry, but also really wanted to understand the game better, wanted to understand what is going on the field in a more detailed way. And I thought my biggest question about football was like, what are wide receivers doing when they run off the screen on Sunday when we're watching games? You know, because we apparently know like wide receiver production is so dependent on outside variables, right? Like, I think it's the hardest position, one of the hardest positions to isolate from outside factors. And obviously, mm-hmm. we know that like the quarterback's got to get them the ball. That's number one. But also, like, wide receivers play so many different roles. I think it's more dramatic now than it was when I started charting for reception perception. You know, I came up with the idea in 2013, the first full season is the 2014 season was the first one that I charted like full data for. So basically, like, I was trying to understand, like, how can we isolate wide receivers beyond their outside variables, outside from the quarterback play, stuff like that. You know, how can we kind of better categorize them too? That's a big thing. Like, what Cooper Kupp does is entirely different than what a guy like, you know, Davante Adams or like Stephon Diggs, an even better example, you know, these pure X receiver or pure outside receiver guys. So the big goal though, again, is evaluating players, wide receivers outside of those variables, trying to isolate them as much as possible. So what I do, the only way to really do that is to watch them and chart them and record what they're doing. Because the one thing the wide receiver can control is how often do they run good routes? How often do they get separation? How often do they get open for that quarterback to have a reasonable target? So what I do is over an 8-game sample for NFL players and college players and go in and chart every single route that the player runs over that sample of games, chart how often they get open against man coverage, zone coverage, press coverage, how often they get open on each individual route type. Basically anything that you want to know about a wide receiver, reception perception is going to tell you that. So that's really the goal there, is to isolate wide receivers as much as possible. Try to answer that question, like, who are these players outside of those surrounding variables? And then obviously, again, I think more than ever, it's important to like categorize them in the roles that they play and how that's different from other players on their own team and then across the league.
Yeah, I love that. One of the things that you've always kind of instilled in me is that we can't really judge a wide receiver, you know, his production divided by anything, you know, yards per out run or something that's used, yards per target. And listen, I use that stuff too. I'm a fantasy content creator. It's what I have access to, but I always loved your kind of analysis from that. And I love kind of taking that yards per out run or those yards per target and then taking them to the work that you've done and kind of compare and contrasting to see if like, all right, where are my undervalued players, right? My undervalued real life players, because everyone's looking at this data. Almost everyone has a PFF subscription now, or they have a subscription to some fantasy data or you know, charting data, but not everyone has reception perception, you know, subscription. They should. I mean, that's
not
why
yet.
That's why
Let's
we're
hope.
Here. But you know, I always love taking that and comparing those, because you can kind of see things illuminated before your eyes where you talk about some of those variables maybe impacting a player like Terry McLaurin or Stephon Diggs early in his career and such on like that. So I always appreciated, you know, that how you frame things like that, because we're just taking the wide receiver and talking about where he wins. Now, I do have to ask you, we saw this week, and I don't know if you caught this, I'm sure you might have gotten it, but Pro Football Focus has now started to incorporate route win data and stuff. And, you know, PFF Moo, Timo posted an article on this and showed the correlation and the value of wide receiver win rates. And how does that make you feel? Not from like a stance of like, oh, they're doing something like I did, but how does it feel like that? Do you feel vindicated and say like, yes, this has mattered all along, and I've been telling you?
That's obviously, I hadn't thought about it that way, but it is certainly like vindicating. And I think the funny part about it is, yeah, obviously, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. Like, reception perception was part of the Fantasy Footballers draft kit for a long time. I did it at Football Guys, you know, now obviously it's own website, its own thing. But, you know, part of me still feels like the way that I felt when I initially put it out on Backyard Banter, which is like, does anybody else care about this? Is anybody else going to find this interesting? Because obviously I do. I've dedicated, like you said, an absurd amount of hours to charting this stuff. And I mean, it's year, like I said, the first full season I did this was 2014. Obviously, like, I collected data for the 2021 season. So it's been all of these years, and I've charted like over almost 400 players at this point, you know, tens and thousands of routes like over all these seasons. Like, and I'm still sometimes like, I mean, I'm geeked up about it and I'm fired up to figure out this stuff every single year. So it is nice to see like, yeah, other people are asking the same questions I am about the game, because that was kind of the point. That was the point all those years ago, was like, this is a question I want answered. Like, I don't feel like anybody is out there in the industry answering it in a really good way. So let me try to do it. Let me try to be the one to do it. Now that there's other people trying to find the same answer, I think that it, you're right. That is very vindicating. I hadn't thought about it in that way. I think it just, now's a good time to be in the wide receiver business too, man. Such a, this offseason especially is more important than ever, I think, to try to like analyze players independent of their surrounding variables. Cause so many guys have changed teams. The wide receiver market is blowing up, and it's a fascinating position that people are super interested in, and to see PFF put that out, like, yeah, it's great that this is something I have been talking about for a while. And I think people care about it more and more, and that's great.
You know, I love to spin that off into something you brought up and, you know, kind of ask you, you know, we've seen the wide receiver market this summer obviously just explode in terms of, you know, getting paid and kind of the annual average salary, just kind of all these guys dominoes chasing each other, the next in line. You know, and the rookie influx has been so great. We see teams now, I put an article on the site talking about the discussion about how many teams are using wide receivers on the field more than ever, how many wide receivers are on the field per snap. You've ventured now into the college game as well. Do you foresee, like, the way that the NFL is played, the college game is played, that we ever will have another just like down wide receiver class again? Or is this like something we just always are going to see now moving forward?
I think so much of it, like, because everything's a trickle down effect mm-hmm. with the game. Like, everything comes from the fact that, like, there's more 7-on-7 played than ever, you know, because of like some player safety things with the lower levels with younger kids and stuff like that. Like, these guys mm-hmm. that are coming in the NFL now, they've been running routes, you know, whether not like, you know, necessarily traditional in-depth NFL routes, but they've been running routes. Like, they've been beating their, you know, man coverage defenders for years now. I mean, some of these guys coming into the NFL, I mean, for all, you know, a better chunk of their entire lives. So it's tough to imagine that ever stopping. And just like the funny part about the position right now is that the supply seems to be greater than ever. Like you said, mm-hmm. there's a new crop coming into the NFL that's better than ever, but the demand also hasn't seemed to stop either. And, you know, for every team that like Kansas City that decides, okay, we're not going to pay Tyreek Hill this much money because of all the other salaries on our books. And like the way that we think maybe we could change our identity on offense or whatever. There's a Dolphins team that wants to bring that talent in. And because, as you mentioned, now the league is just expanding from how many wide receivers are on the field. That demand has not stopped even as you go down the depth chart either. So I guess I wonder if it will ever be a bubble that pops like with the receiver mm-hmm. position, but I kind of tend to doubt it just because teams want good pass catchers. Passing is more important than ever, and there's just more good receivers coming into the NFL than ever before.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're gonna roll in. We're gonna talk about some players. I know you guys all want Matt's take on some players. And one of the areas I want to start in first, and you did a podcast this week with Scott Pianoski, you work with at Yahoo. It's something I've been kind of harping to listeners like the entire offseason and for years since I've taken over the fantasy kind of angle at Sharp Football, and it's investment into year two wide receivers. A lot of people think of the old notion like players make the third year jump. It's actually year two where you kind of get the most value out of players exceeding expectations, especially from an ADP stance. And we kind of just talked about the conversation we just led into this is that last year's draft class was absolutely sensational. They had a great rookie class last year, but we've seen this year, you know, outside of Ja'Marr Chase, who's already treated as an elite entity, we're going to skip over him a little bit. We still have a lot of guys that kind of are in kind of no man's land where people kind of don't really know where they want to draft these guys or handle these players as talents, because we still just have the small sample of these guys. So I do want to talk about these year two wide receivers a little bit. And I kind of want to start with two guys that we know played well last year, and you can get into the nuts and bolts of how they played last year, but also had situations change on them. You know, we had Jalen Waddle with the Miami Dolphins, who set the record for rookie receptions in a season. Now he broke Anquan Boldin's record. The Dolphins went out and add Tyreek Hill. So how do we look at this Dolphins situation, not just from adding Tyreek Hill, but also, you know, Mike McDaniel, where do we see Jalen Waddle from year one to year two kind of fitting into a role in this offense, where you see that going, how he fits playing with Tyreek Hill, and how you see Tyreek Hill kind of feeding in his role here in this Miami offense?
I think that Jalen Waddle might be the most difficult player to project right now, because I think that Jalen Waddle is a very, very good player. That's the starting point. Like, we typically want to see our breakout receivers, especially if they're going to play on the perimeter. And I think Waddle obviously will play some inside, but like for the most part, he's going to be a guy that plays in two wide receiver sets. He's going to be an outside receiver. We typically want to see these guys be at or above 70% success rate versus man coverage. We saw that from Jalen Waddle in year one. And I actually think there's more meat on the bone for Jalen Waddle as a player than what he showed as a rookie. Like, he was very much like a kind of in a pop gun role. But you know, getting back to his college profile, among all these guys that we're talking about in that 2021 class, he was number one in a smaller sample size because he was injured during that year. He didn't play a full season. He was number one in success rate versus man coverage. Like, he could beat all, you know, beat defenders at every level of the route tree, but obviously as a rookie, he was limited to sort of this pop gun role. Part of that is like this weird RPO offense they were playing. You know, some of that is just the way Tua plays, but also I think some of it was, he wasn't completely healthy his entire rookie season either, coming off that ankle injury that he kind of re-aggravated in that national championship game for Alabama. So I think that Jalen Waddle is a really good player. I don't really have a ton of questions about him as an individual talent, but you know, Tyreek Hill being there complicates matters, because I think Tyreek Hill is not just one of the premier deep threats in the NFL. Like, all of this sort of talk about, by the way, like, has anybody made the media rounds more than Tyreek Hill this freaking off season? Like, is a guy that we really never, this is just proof in the pudding of like the type of organization that Kansas City runs. And I'm not trying to get off track here, but like, we never heard almost anything out of Tyreek Hill in Kansas City. The second he goes to Miami, like every week, you know, Pro Football Focus and all these other media, I have a new quote graphic to put out on Tyreek Hill. I mean, so, but some of the like discussion about him as a deep threat and then Tua fitting in like as a deep ball passer, I don't really care so much about that, because Tyreek Hill, and this is something I pointed out with reception perception after Tyreek Hill's rookie year, like, he's a really good route runner. He can separate at all levels. Like, he's a detailed technician, one of the better press coverage receivers when teams do get up in his face. And, you know, Kansas City did so much moving him around the formation. Like, I think it's really tough to project these two guys and like the volume that they'll get overall. But I think like the possibilities really are endless in terms of where these guys can line up and where they can play, because, and Mike McDaniel, obviously a really creative offensive coordinator. Like, I think in an ideal world, you want Tyreek Hill to be your outside receiver that's going to, you know, probably face more press coverage, and Jalen Waddle probably be that guy that, you know, wins on more traditional X receiver routes. And then Jalen Waddle, I think, will probably play more slot flanker hybrid, which I think is a good fit for him overall. It's just difficult to project this offense because of all the changes with the coaching staff. And also just, we still have questions about who Tua is and how good he is.
Yeah, the Dolphins are one of the teams I'm most excited to see kind of early in the preseason. I don't know what they'll show, but they're one of the teams I look at how they're built on paper and just how much speed they've accrued, even at the running back position, adding Chase Edmonds and Raheem Mostert. I mean, this is the team, like your old school, like Madden, like, I'm just going to play the fastest guys and beat you with the fastest guys. you know, I mean, because, you know, you think they want to come out 11 personnel, they can come out and they can line up Cedric Wilson, Waddle, and Tyreek, and then ISO Mike Gesicki. They can do it with anything, really, like any type of their formations. Like, they're a team that has basically, you know, a bounds of endless possibilities in terms of what they want to do formation-wise. I'm really excited to kind of check out. And you talk about last year, like, they were forced. Their hand was kind of forced given their offensive line, some of what the player Tua is, and then the surrounding talent outside of Jalen Waddle to be the offense they were last year. So I'm really excited to see like kind of the expansion for Jalen Waddle in year two. The diversification of his route tree, because we know he can win downfield as well. One of the other rookies, his college teammate, you know, Devontae Smith, also played really well last year. The counting stats maybe not have been there, but he was as advertised as a player. You can kind of get into that. But then the Eagles go out and immediately add Arthur Juan, you know, during the draft this season. One of my favorite players in the NFL is Arthur Juan, too. I mean, he reminds me of Terrell Owens. Like, he's the kind of like that type of player, you know. But, you know, he kind of just destroyed in that system in Tennessee, you know, because of how much play action they ran. I mean, talk about intermediate routes, you know, where you're sucking up a linebacker and then just putting the ball into his, you know, hands and space. And then you just, he's playing bully ball with defensive backs. How do we see Arthur Juan in this Eagles offense, kind of how he impacts Devontae Smith a little bit as well, you know, and how we see the Eagles kind of moving forward in 2022?
Yeah, I know that I'm like way too dorky about the wide receiver position when like the moment that trade happens is sitting on draft night, like after the kind of the surprise washes over you and stuff like mm-hmm. that. My first thought is, oh man, I can't wait to see who lines up in what position, which is like such a dork way to think about it. But it's really fascinating because I think when you look at both of these guys, like either one of them, Devontae Smith or AJ Brown, can play like pure perimeter X receiver. And what I mean by that, for people that like don't know, when I say X receiver, it's like the guy that doesn't move around pre-snap, that just is tethered to the line of scrimmage, most likely is going to, you know, face more press coverage, more man coverage as a pure outside X receiver like that. They're tethered to the line of scrimmage. It's more like the, you mentioned Terrell Owens, like it's that more throwback true number one receiver, your AJ Greens, your Julio Jones, like that sort of era. Obviously number one receivers come in all shapes and sizes now, but I think either one of these guys can play that position, because Devontae Smith last year did basically play. He was the Eagles' X receiver. He was thrown out there in that role and won at a really high rate. Look, checks all the boxes that you want from a success rate versus man zone press coverage perspective. We knew he was a great route runner. He was a great route runner in his first season and separated at every level in that role. The areas where he kind of came up short were, you know, after the catch, average in contested situations. Those are areas where AJ Brown is obviously fantastic, but AJ Brown is, I think, still to this day underrated as a route runner, as a separator. He's number two in success rate versus press coverage, number three in success rate versus man coverage last season. He's been a dominant outside receiver the last 2 years. And like last year, I think he moved more to kind of being playing more in the slot, playing more flanker, because he was kind of accommodating to Julio Jones coming onto that team. And like X receiver is basically what Julio's done his entire year or his entire career. So I can't wait to see where they deploy these guys, because I think Brown really complements Devontae Smith really well. Devontae Smith, I think, is a great individual player. This offense is just tough to figure out though, right, Rich? Because mm-hmm. like in the first half of the year, they came out and were pretty aggressive in terms of pass rate over expectation, but we know then they dialed that way back and were a better team when they did so in the second half of the year. But I mean, how do you not want to throw a ton of passes at AJ Brown? How do you not want to throw a ton of passes at Devontae Smith? Because they're such an awesome tandem that complements each other so well. And I think AJ Brown's an awesome player. I think he's like a top five talent wise receiver out there right now. Probably not quite like that level if you're just sitting down ranking guys, like, you know, on a list, a top 10 list. Very difficult thing to do right now, by the way. So yeah, I think it's just an awesome combination for sure. And I can't wait to see what they do in this offense. It's just, I'm not quite sure how they're going to play.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Eagles too. I mean, not only did they find success, you know, altering their offense, and it's tough to rebottle the success that they had because it was so good. It also, you know, it made Jalen Hurts a better quarterback. They're going to make him a better quarterback by giving him another better player too. But they've got just a phenomenal offensive line when healthy. They've got our sixth easiest ranked run schedule too, which kind of like the feed into this. So we've seen Tyreek kind of be treated by the fantasy community with like a little bit of trepidation. He's a little bit older. His counting stats weren't like quite as good per game as they were over the course mm-hmm. of his career. People don't like Tua. So he's kind of fallen down a little bit, where him and Waddle don't have such a gap. But AJ Brown and Devontae Smith have a really wide gap between them. Do you believe that that gap should be as wide as it is right now?
I don't think so. It's going to be tough for me to, like, if I'm sitting down in a draft, it's going to be tough for me to click Jalen Waddle where he's going. It's not mm-hmm. going to be tough for me to click Devontae Smith where he's going. Mm-hmm. I think both of these two tandems are awesome, are electric, and they come with questionable quarterbacks. And one offensive system, I guess, we've seen before, although we've seen two different sides of the coin there in Philadelphia. Miami's just a complete unknown. So I don't really think there's a big gap, if any gap at all, in between like how good Jalen Waddle is versus how good Devontae Smith is. Like, I think by the end of the year, we might even think that Devontae Smith is a better player than Jalen Waddle. I think that's within the range of outcomes too. I think that gap doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
Yeah. Definitely something, you know, some food for thought there. One of the other guys that kind of feels like not just the fantasy community can't really decide what they want to do with right now. But, you know, kind of like a real football fans almost seem hesitant too, because he doesn't play that kind of like flashy position. Like we talk about that X receiver. He's not the guy on the ball. You know, we say when you watch football, check in before the play, the guy that's checking in with the ref, right? That's your X receiver, right? The guy on the football. Mm-hmm. This guy, Amon-Ra St. Brown, had one of the all-time heaters to close last season.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely bananas. You know, they had Anthony Lynn got out of town midway through the season. You know, he had some injuries, kind of opened up some opportunity. But it kind of feels like people have one foot in and one foot out on Amon-Ra St. Brown. Your data kind of suggests something different.
I think the best part about wide receiver play right now in the NFL is that it's opened up the way the game has opened up, the fact there are more receivers on the field and the way the game has changed. Like, I don't think maybe five years ago is aggressive, but certainly like 10 years ago, like there wasn't guys doing what Amon-Ra St. Brown was doing, like playing the receiver position that way. I think it's, you know, I called him Bud Light Cooper Kupp coming into the NFL draft. And then he goes to a team with the Rams front office guy, you know, the former Rams quarterback, stuff like that. But I'm pretty in on Amon-Ra St. Brown because I'm in on this archetype of player. These guys who are going to be, you know, zone beaters. And that's Amon-Ra faces zone coverage on 67% of his sampled routes and reception perception, 80.4% success rate. Like that's the green light there. If you're going to play in this role and you're over 80%, like you want to see that. And I think that he's a player who, you know, he wins on these design touches plays because he's great in the open field. He's good at winning contested passes, stuff like that. But he certainly is a really smart player, you know, can win on dig routes, curl routes, slant routes. I don't really understand the controversy around him as a player because he's not going to do what he did the last 4 weeks of the season, but nobody's asking you to believe that, right? Like if you're drafting in fantasy, nobody's asking you to believe that Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to have like a 30% target share. Otherwise he'd be going in like the first three freaking rounds and he's not going in the first three rounds. So I don't really understand why he's a controversial player. I think like we just see this arc and I can't wait to see how other teams try to, because we know that like whatever happened last season, teams are going to try to copy like the most successful teams. I've been saying for years now that Cooper Kupp has one of the most unique wide receiver roles in the NFL. And I still feel like we don't talk about that enough, even after the season that he had. Like, again, what he's doing, what Cooper Kupp is doing, and this is a trickle down effect to Amon-Ra St. Brown, because I think they're pretty similar, like archetype players, obviously. There's just not a lot of guys out there doing that. It's a super unique role. The way that they're able to get away from press coverage, the way they're schemed short targets, and like quarterbacks like Jared Goff, you know, your average to below average quarterbacks love layups like that. And like, we could get a lot more juice out of certain quarterbacks if their offenses would, you know, and like, I love that you brought the point about Anthony Lynn kind of getting pushed to the side. You know, Dan Campbell and Ben Johnson taking over play calling, play design duties there in the second half of the season. Cause I think that was part of the curtain opening for Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like that was part of it, not just like guys getting hurt, but they designed this role for him. The more time he played, they had already sort of started promoting him after his bye week from a routes run, a snaps played perspective. So I don't know, man, I think he's like a featured part of their offense and I think he should be, cause it makes a lot of sense. And it's just an efficient way to use a player like this.
Yeah, and I love the complementary pieces the Lions have started to build in this offense. I mean, obviously, we're going to get a DJ Shark bridge to Jamison Williams. Now, DJ Shark, maybe not an as effective player, but he's going to at least run straight lines down the field. Yeah. And that's going to make a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown even better. I know that there's some pause of the addition of adding Jamison Williams and how does this impact, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown. But it's only going to make those types of areas of the field more open. Him. And we've seen that kind of happen with Cooper Kupp, you know, over the course of his career as well, especially with the additions of Matthew Stafford and then how just from a functionality stance, what the Rams system does with because they run so many, like, you know, they're running deep digs and crossers and all these things to free up what Kupp is doing underneath. I think we're going to see a lot more of that because of the personnel the Lions have added, where it's not Josh Reynolds. It's not, you know, these guys that they had on the field. So I'm very excited for him. I also am in an Amara St. Brown. I think you go back to his penultimate season at USC, and he was so dynamic playing out of in that same role out of the slot. Then Michael Pittman leaves. Drake London's not ready yet. He's too young to kind of take over a role in the offense. And Amon-Ra St. Brown then plays outside at USC his final season, and he doesn't play as strongly, and it kind of lowered his draft capital in terms of like where he went in the draft and how he was regarded entering the draft. And I think we've seen him immediately go right back to that role that he was in, you know, in 2019, playing with Michael Pittman, and just seen him flourish again. So I definitely love that.
Cooper Kupp has always been better. The Rams offenses, even back to the Jared Goff days, it's always been better when they've had a lid lifter. Like when Brandon Cooks was there in 2018, like he was the finishing piece to that offense. When they, like, once Odell Beckham was fully integrated, like Cooper Kupp's even talked about this, like on, and I think he was on the Ringer NFL podcast. I heard him talk about this. Like their game plan was totally thrown off when Beckham got and you could see it. You could like feel it happening when the game happened, when Beckham got hurt, because he was such a huge part of their game plan. Like when you have somebody, and obviously Jameson Williams is going to be a lid lifter at bare minimum. Like, it's just, I know that it's kind of a bit to say like this guy being added is actually good news for this player or whatever. But in this case, like when you're running against that much zone coverage, you're going to get targeted against like linebackers and stuff like that. And over the middle of the field, it is good news when you have somebody that can push the defense back like a Jameson Williams. I mean, they were running out goofballs at the other wide receiver position. I think it's very helpful for the offense overall.
Yeah, and that's a great point. You know, we have all this, you know, cornerback data is something that has something that's influxed our course of our tenure being in fantasy football. And the one thing I always try to harp on people is when you're looking at cornerback wide receiver matchups is slot receivers don't run routes strictly against the slot defender, even though we present it that way on, you know, in a certain context. They're like, one, the NFL is basically playing zone coverage 60-40. And they're running routes, like you said, against space defenders. It's not like Jalen Ramsey is probably the bad example. Like, let's say like Mike Hilton, right? Like a solid slot corner. He's just not lining up over Amon-Ra St. Brown for 100% of the snaps. They're playing man coverage. No. It doesn't happen. It's such an advantage for these guys in this role. One of the guys that was in this role in college, he was in a lot of roles in college, but he kind of thrived in this role, was Rashad Bateman. And, you know, we kind of saw him last year. He gave us a couple teases. First of all, he started the year injured. We really didn't get to see him play a lot. He came in. He commanded a target share playing alongside Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews. Then the Ravens just die. Literally all their players fall apart. They lose everybody. They lose all their defensive players. They lose half their offensive linemen. They lose Lamar Jackson. And this offense just caves in on itself. Without Lamar Jackson, they scored a touchdown on just 17% of their drives. It would have been 28th in the NFL over the full course of the season. They scored a touchdown once every 192 offensive yards. It would have been 30th over the full season. Now we trade Marquise Brown to the Arizona Cardinals, and we are counting on Rashad Bateman to step into this role that they drafted him in as a wide receiver one in the first round a year ago. Do you believe that he's going to kind of hit the ground running and he's capable of fulfilling this role, or is there going to be a struggle this season?
I love Rashad Bateman. I'm very, very high on him as a player. You mentioned that like he played that sort of like big slot receiver role a little bit at Minnesota as a collegiate player, but like last year for the Ravens, he was their X receiver. Like 83.6% of his snaps outside in his reception perception sample, 76% on the line of scrimmage. Again, that's that like traditional number one X receiver role. And like, I think he's very similar to a player like Justin Jefferson, who came out of college as like a slot receiver, and it was like he went outside and like all he'd just been one of the best receivers in the NFL for, you know, his first two seasons, and not like really playing as a slot receiver either. So I think that Bateman could do either one of those roles. I think he's a really natural, great separator at all levels. He checks every box that you want. 85th percentile success rate versus zone coverage, 72% success rate versus man. Wins. I think he's just going to thump people on like slants, curls, digs, those over the middle routes that Lamar loves to throw is great on, but he is a great outside the numbers receiver too. He's very, very different than Hollywood Brown. And I think Brown's a pretty good player. I don't think Marquise Brown is bad or anything like that. I don't think you need to think that Marquise Brown, he's going to be an upgrade on Marquise Brown, or I don't think you need to think that Marquise Brown it doesn't really matter. Like, he's off the team right at this point. I think there's more than enough volume in this offense to go around between Mark Andrews, Rashad Bateman, and pretty much nobody else, which is what the depth chart looks like, right? I mean, that depth chart beyond Rashad Bateman is not good. Or at least there's no one proven there. Like, I'm interested in Tylan Wallace. I'm interested in Devin Duvernay, but there's not a lot going on there. I think Bateman profiles as a true number one receiver. And the Ravens haven't really had anybody like this, certainly not in the Lamar Jackson era, an X receiver, a traditional guy that can win at all levels, but they really haven't had anyone like this. When was the last time the Ravens had like a good young receiver prospect like Torrey Smith, but Torrey Smith wasn't this type of player either. No. They haven't had anyone of this archetype in years.
Yeah, Torrey Smith really kind of was it. He did end Champ Bailey's career, but Torrey Smith just never kind of manifested. He just never kind of manifested into that full-fledged wide receiver, right? He just always was a lid lifter, and we never got like the rest of the game kind of developed. And Bateman, like I said, college, he starved with that. One of the players that I absolutely was enamored with last year, Bateman was one, and there's another one, was Elijah Moore. And he's what I feel like is like a reception perception, like the antithesis of reception perception. So you look at his actual like statistical breakdown last year, it's not like overly impressive. And when Zach Wilson was throwing them football, it was absolutely trash. They completed under 50% of their targets. So Zach Wilson was throwing to Elijah Moore, but it wasn't all Elijah Moore's fault. But you go back to the prospect that Elijah Moore was, and this is a guy who entered the NFL, averaged the most yards per game of any Power 5 player entering the NFL his final collegiate season. And he did it in the SEC, where he's dropping 200 yards on Florida and 140 in Alabama and just absolutely shredding these guys that now play DB in the NFL. Talk to me a little bit about Elijah Moore. And then also we're not going to talk about a lot of rookies, but the addition of Garrett Wilson and kind of how you see the marriage of those two players playing together.
Yeah. Elijah Moore is just, I think he's a stud. I feel super confident in him as a player. Coming into the NFL, he was a guy that people thought might be a slot only player because, again, like a Justin Jefferson type of guy, they ran him so much out of the slot at Ole Miss. Like, Lane Kiffin running him as a pure slot receiver, but he comes in last year and his reception perception sample, under 30% of his snaps were inside. And he played a lot of like just on the line X receiver too, and just got open at all levels. 75% success rate. When you see these guys, if you subscribe to the site, like, you see these guys that are over 75% and at or over 80% versus zone, those are like the best receivers in the NFL, or they eventually grow into becoming the best receivers in the NFL. And I think that's who Elijah Moore is. I mean, he's a guy who can take the top off the defense, and he can separate with good route running underneath as well. I just don't think there are any limitations to him as a player. And I think this is another, again, like big wide receiver dork thing. Who lines up where on this Jets offense between him, Garrett Wilson, as you mentioned, even Corey Davis. I think Corey Davis is kind of a jag, like he's solid NFL receiver, but probably going to get usurped by these two more younger, exciting guys. I'm very fascinated. Like, if they end up doing kind of the Tyler Lockett thing with Elijah Moore, I wouldn't be surprised about that. Like, as a guy who he can win outside, but you stick him inside and he can really rip you from a vertical perspective. I am very excited about Elijah Moore. I hope Zach Wilson is good, because Garrett Wilson, I think, is a pretty good prospect as well. I think Garrett Wilson's probably, I don't know. How do you feel about these two guys coming into this year? Because I think I will project, I just finished my projections this morning, so I won't say I will anymore. I did project Elijah Moore to lead the team in catches and yards. I think he'll be the top receiver this year. Do you agree with that, or what do you think?
I think that his versatility to play anywhere and win anywhere is what edges him out for me versus Corey Davis and kind of, obviously a player entering the NFL. I'm always a little more cautious on the rookies from like a stance of like, all right, well, this guy's guaranteed to be good. Obviously, the way the game has transitioned now, it's helped alleviate some of those concerns because it's opened up opportunities for these guys earlier in their careers. But yeah, I'm always going to side with the guy that I think has the most functionality on the actual football field in terms of all right, if they want to play Elijah Moore in the slot, he can win. If they want to play him at X, he can win. If they want to play him at flanker, he can win. And I think that there's probably a little bit more questions with Garrett Wilson. Now, player, I don't want to turn this into a negative thing about him, but, Garrett Wilson playing at Ohio State, didn't have to necessarily win in the quick game a lot. And he's one of these guys that, and I don't know if Reception Perception showed this, but you see it a lot in the film community. Their take on Garrett Wilson was that there's a lot of, exaggerated movement. It takes him a little bit longer to, in a stem to get open and do things like that. And is that going to fully transition to the NFL? But that's not me being, it's very minute. And it's just splitting hairs, but right. I'm with you too on the Corey Davis thing. I mean, Corey Davis literally has given us one fleeting moment of NFL success. We fingers crossed on Zach Wilson. A lot does ride on him.
If he's average, if he's just even okay, that would be a huge leap from what he was last year. But if he's even average this year, I think Elijah Moore will be fine. If he's good, then it starts to trickle down to man, there's a lot of exciting players in this offense. Mm-hmm. They invested in the tight end room. They obviously they go too deep at running back with their two draft picks over the last year. I don't mean to be bagging on Corey Davis, because if he's your third receiver, that's fine. And then they've got Braxton Berrios, who, him and Zach Wilson wear each other's names on their shirts and stuff like that. They're I guarantee you Braxton Berrios, if this Jets offense thing does work out, he's going to be the most annoying player to fantasy managers this year. Cause he can play a little bit and Zach Wilson clearly likes him. That's going to be irritating when he has three touchdowns and 600 yards this year or something like that. He's taking your points away from your other guys and all that stuff.
Yeah. Maybe not as good as accounting stats. It was Randall Cobb was a couple years ago in the Cowboys, where you're just wow, did Randall Cobb have that good of a year?
Yeah.
There's two more guys I just want to touch on. We'll lump them together because they're more of a mixed bag. The overall production wasn't there as rookies for varying reasons. And I want you to kind of explain what these guys are as players. And it's Kadarius Toney and Rondale Moore. Now, we kind of know Rondale Moore, what kind of role he's going to be in this offense. We know that the volume can fluctuate. Kadarius Toney, they've already told us early on in the season, he's going to play outside, where he played almost strictly in the slot as a rookie. And Wandale Robinson is going to fill in for Sterling Shepard while Sterling Shepard is coming back from that late season Achilles injury. You can kind of fold that into kind of the take as well. But what kind of players do we have in Kadarius Toney and Rondale Moore?
Yeah, let's start with Rondale Moore, who, like I've said all along, he didn't even really play wide receiver last year. Whatever the hell he was doing, it wasn't playing wide receiver. So just read off a couple stats here from his reception perception profile, which I've said is the weirdest profile I've had. And I've been doing this, like I said, since 2014, over 300, 400 players in the sample. So there's a lot of guys. This, I think, is the weirdest one. Rondale Moore in his reception perception sample ran a screen route on 29.9% of his sampled routes. That is number one in RP history by a lot. The closest is Deebo Samuel at 18%. And that was in an injury marred season in 2020. That was when he was clearly he had that little low A dot. He wasn't really being used to his full potential, I think, because he was just an injury ruined year. The next closest guy is Albert Wilson. Shout out Bertler, by the way. 14.8% screen routes in a small sample in 2018. That's a 50% drop off from what Rondale Moore did last year, where he ran against zone coverage on 89% of his sampled routes. That's insane. Cooper Kupp's the only guy who clears 70% because of that role that he was in. This is just it's crazy stuff. Was in the backfield on the highest in terms of any reception perception player sampled since 2014. Just, I have no confidence in projecting Rondale Moore as a player right now, because it just was just didn't play wide receiver last year. I think even projecting him to be Christian Kirk's fill-in the slot is a stretch. I think he showed some decent success rates against zone coverage, 78%. That's about the 51st percentile. That's fine. But a lot of that is those little Mickey Mouse routes. So I have no confidence in projecting Rondale Moore. If he turns out to be great, that's awesome. I do think he's really fun after the catch. He can break tackles for sure. But yeah, I'm it's just, we'll see. I'd rather them line up Marquise Brown as like the vertical slot receiver than have Rondale Moore be in that role, but we'll see if that's what they end up doing. Obviously, Hopkins' suspension makes that complicated. Kadarius Toney, I think, is a tough evaluation. 80% success rate versus zone coverage, like I mentioned, that's pretty solid. You want to see that from your interior players. But I think it's I think he's still a long way away from being like a real legitimate route runner, like for against man coverage, against press coverage. And look, he's gonna play outside, but he's not gonna play X receiver. That's gonna be Kenny Galladay's role. He's gonna see more man coverage, press coverage. And I mentioned to you before we recorded this that people have been kind of pressing me on not being negative on podcasts or not telling them who was bad. You know who was bad last year? Kenny Galladay. Kenny Galladay was really, really, really bad last year in reception perception. And he's not a guy that's usually, you know, historically been that bad of a separator. He's not one of the best separators in the NFL, but he was among the worst guys sampled last year. So my evaluation on Toney coming into this year was really going to depend. Like if Kenny Galladay showed some signs of life as an individual player isolated in RP, I would have felt a little more confident being, you know, excited about him in year two. I don't know, man. We'll see after that bad of a performance. Kadarius Toney, I think, can probably play as like a Robert Woods style flanker receiver, you know, who moves around, who gets a lot of, like, you know, I think you mentioned PFF Moo at the top. Like he put out a tweet about, the Rams receivers over the last couple of years, both Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp have seen a ton of targets against linebackers and safeties, not traditional cornerbacks. And like, you know, Robert Woods plays more outside than Cooper Kupp, obviously, but there are ways to scheme these guys targets. But I think that's kind of where Kadarius Toney is. I think he still needs to be schemed targets. I still think he needs to be put in advantageous situations. But I think there are a lot of promising signs with him as a zone beater in year one. And certainly as like an after the catch player, he's just, you know, freaky. He's just dynamic. So kind of find myself like I'm not super bullish on Kadarius Toney, but I'm not all the way out either.
Nice. I mean, listen, I know we spent a lot of time there in those year two wide receivers, but it's something I've been really trying to hammer, you know, to emphasize to people, not just from a fantasy stance of these are the archetypes of like the year two wide receivers. So you want to be early on these guys. But if you look at every single player we talked about, and Matt had basically something positive to say about everybody, everyone outside of Jalen Waddle is going wide receiver 26 or later. I think it's imperative you get 2 to 3 of these guys on every roster if you can, because you're getting them as your wide receiver 3+, and you're just hoping to run into those breakouts and the upside these players present and the positive things that you heard from Matthew Harmon. Now, one guy that literally has had almost next to nothing negative said about him this offseason, and all he's done is climb, is Michael Pittman. And anytime that this happens, it kind of feels like, do we just got to get on the surfboard and get on the wave with the fantasy community? Do we try to be contrarian? Is this a false flag from the community from Michael Pittman, or is this guy really, really, really that damn good?
Oh, he's that damn good. You know, he was a guy coming into last year I was excited about because he did clear that 70% success rate versus man coverage threshold, like I mentioned earlier. And he is like a pure outside receiver. They do some creative stuff with him. They get him, you know, on the move a little bit in Indianapolis. But I mean, that's, again, that archetype of player, big outside receiver. You want to see them over 70% if you're projecting really good stuff from them over the course of their career. We saw that in year one. Year two, man, I mean, he was even better than I expected. Like we're talking about 96th percentile success rate versus press coverage, 83.7% success rate versus zone. Like he was awesome, 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 isolated as an individual. I think there's a lot of early career Allen Robinson in his game, almost melded with like a Keenan Allen type of player. Like when you look at his success rate, route success rate chart on reception perception, just awesome scores on slants, curls, digs. Like that was the Keenan Allen, like bread and butter with Phillip Rivers. Like he would just thump teams over and over again on those type of routes. So I think he's like an interesting blend of those two guys. Sounds good to me, right? So yeah, I mean, I think he really is that damn good. I could hear arguments about him, you know, really high on draft boards. And I think like he will be these top 10 receiver lists that are coming out right now. Like I think he'll get mentioned in that group by the end of this year. I think it's a quarterback upgrade from going from Carson Wentz to Matt Ryan. And I think like people view Michael Pittman almost as like just a jump ball receiver because he was playing with Carson Wentz last year. And like, that's the way Carson Wentz likes to play. But I think Pittman can do it all. I truly believe he is the next great, like number one receiver in the NFL.
And we've talked about Matt Ryan and Carson Wentz's on-target stats on this podcast. They have our number 7 ranked passing schedule, a team that's going to win a lot of games, doesn't have a lot of target competition, just checks so many boxes. Yeah. And then you heard it from here. Also, very good at the game.
Very good at the game, baby.
Which helps all those things. But you brought up Allen Robinson. And now Allen Robinson, I believe, is the one player you are most associated with. And maybe this will change over the course of history, but kind of when you were coming up, he was like your first like kind of plant flag guy. And, you know, he ends up popping, ends up being a good player. Allen Robinson is a guy last year that kind of left everyone with a sour taste in their mouths that drafted him highly. We've seen even with this transition going to a dynamic offense that is a really great offense, people seem to be like, I don't know. He kind of burned me last year. What did you find for Allen Robinson last year compared to his career? Is he really someone that's throttling down, or does he have something, you know, kind of left in the tank here going to this Rams offense?
I think he's absolutely got something left in the tank. Look, I know that he wasn't as good as he was. I mean, look, just from accounting stats perspective, he was really, really bad last year. I'm one of the people that drafted him early last year, so definitely felt that. But I think the biggest difference really, I mean, you know, we're talking about a guy that in 2019, 2020 in reception perception was top 5 in success rate versus man coverage. He certainly was not that good, but he was still at like the 81st percentile last year against man coverage. And he's like a man coverage beating receiver. I think that people that are kind of in the bag for Justin Fields want you to believe that Allen Robinson was really, really terrible last year. I think the inverse of that relationship was much worse. And my biggest problem with what the Bears did with Robinson and Darnell Mooney last year, like you look at their route charts, it's just slants and curls, slants and curls and flat routes. And just it's, I know it's like, we don't want to, you know, keep digging Matt Nagy a grave. Like he's been thumped enough for this, but it's just so stupid when you finally have like a guy that not just can throw deep, but that's the first thing Justin Fields wants to do is like, he's a big game hunter. So just insane usage all around. So much was broken last year. And you know, I want you to trust reception perception people out there listening. I want you to trust like me and my view on players, but you don't even really have to trust me on this one. Like we should trust the Rams in their evaluation on pro wide receivers. Like I talked about it earlier, they've nailed basically every pro receiver they've brought into this program. Like think about Brandon Cooks. Like I said, was the completed piece that they needed on that 2018 roster. Robert Woods, like folks clowned them for that signing back in the day. And he had an awesome run with the Rams. You know, even Odell Beckham, like that people thought he, you know, that he couldn't get open or wasn't the same player. And he was a, like I said, the dynamic piece that they needed in that offense. Like I don't think they go to the Super Bowl last year without Odell Beckham on that roster at the end of the year. So the Rams have really nailed this almost every single time they've made these moves under Sean McVay. And I think that they've nailed another one here in Allen Robinson. Like I do believe he has a lot left in the tank and he's just going to be in such an advantageous role. Like they need Allen Robinson to hit because they need an X receiver to open things up for Cooper Kupp and everything like that. I really believe this is a great fit. And I really believe that Allen Robinson has a lot left to offer.
Yeah, I brought up the Bears thing when he moved to the Rams, just the route disparity of how many curls and slants he was asked to run. Like the Bears offense is like, what if we made the whole plane out of slants and curls? That was the actual offense. The other thing with Allen Robinson too is even coming off of the year he had, like there was an actual investment made into Allen Robinson. Like he didn't just take like a 1-year deal, which what the Rams could have done. They've done this a lot, right? Like with just like, hey, we're trying to win a Super Bowl. We present you with an opportunity to win a Super Bowl. We can't immediately go out and get Odell Beckham because he's probably going to miss the whole entire regular season, if not all of it. And you look at this, the next 2 years, you know, cap hits of $30 million, $26 million. Like this isn't pennies on the dollar here. This isn't like DJ Shark trying to prove himself, right? Like this is an actual investment saying like, no, you are of value to what we want to bring to this offense. And, you know, I feel like he's one of the most undervalued players right now, not just because of the Rams stance, but because of where his actual talent like is compared to what this was put on the box score last year. I know we're eating up a lot of shot clock here because this is what we do, but I do kind of want to get into a couple things here still before we close out. I want to talk about a couple of these ambiguous wide receiver, you know, kind of groups, because we've got a number of teams here that have really good quarterback play, quarterbacks we fully believe in. Either and then things are kind of just wide open. Like, which of these guys do we kind of invest in? You look at ADP, it reflects all these situations and on the wide receiver course. The first one is Denver. And Denver is very interesting to me because of the Russell Wilson factor. They have our number one ranked passing schedule. You look at last year, though, like they had their Denver wide receivers combined for 8 touchdowns last year. That only the Giants had fewer. They just had 1 touchdown as a group the final 8 games of the season. Now, this isn't all Teddy Bridgewater. Like, it can't all be just put on Teddy Bridgewater. And I look at reception perception, and reception perception seems just as mixed as the community on this. What are we doing with the Denver wide receivers?
I know. I go back and forth on this whole issue a lot with the Denver wide receivers. You're totally right, though. I mean, you cannot write off just how miserable this offense was. Just, I mean, Teddy Bridgewater is not Drew, you know, he's not Drew Lock. Like, he's not, you know, the ghost of Joe Flacco, right? Like, Teddy Bridgewater has been passable in situations before. I mean, for God's sakes, he got like 1,000-yard seasons, like from a total yardage standpoint, out of DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, and Curtis Samuel just 1 year before this. Mm-hmm. So it's not all on Teddy Bridgewater last year. Like, these two guys, both Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton, played below their career expectations in reception perception last year. Now, Jerry Jeudy, I think you can write off to injury because he suffered the high ankle sprain in week one.
Matthew, because this, talked about that last week on the show.
There you go. Yeah, that's good to know, because in year one, Jerry Jeudy had a 75% success rate versus man coverage. Wasn't quite good against zone. Like, I don't think he's billed as a great, great route runner. I think he's a good route runner, but not quite there yet. But again, that was a really promising rookie season. He's all the way down at like 68% last year, which is still above average, but it's not quite to what you'd expect from him. So I think you can write him off due to injury, but he's just had a strange start to his career. He's not gotten like, I'm not out on Jerry Jeudy at all, but he hasn't had that start to his career that you wanted. Cortland Sutton's tougher, because he has the best peak season of anybody on this resume, 2019. But last season was really bad, like just across the board. Good at like just basically 2 routes. But again, the way he fell off the map completely was not just due to Teddy Bridgewater, was not just due to quarterback play. Like, he looked like the more he played, the worse he got. Now, that I'll say this, and I don't know if this is something Betts talked about on last week's podcast, and this is the first time I'm going to talk about this, Rich, because I have the actual numbers to this. I just ran them this morning. I have now noticed that guys that have torn their ACL, they're like, you can expect them to lose on average in 2014, in the first year back from that post ACL tear, 2.7% off their success rate versus man coverage score from their peak season. You know, and we're talking about these are the guys that I got in that sample. You know, Allen Robinson, Paul Richardson, Keenan Allen, Julian Edelman, Cooper Kupp, Kelvin Benjamin, Will Fuller, Odell Beckham, and now Cortland Sutton. And by the way, like, if you take Julian Edelman out of it, like, now it's up to 3.9%, because he weirdly saw like an increase. He's the only one that saw an increase in his success rate versus man coverage coming off of a torn ACL. So maybe that explains why Sutton was bad last year. And like some guys like Allen Robinson, you know, Cooper Kupp, they've even Will Fuller, those guys all saw like they got back or even better than their peak season eventually, like in year 2 plus off the ACL tear. So I guess I can, but still, I mean, who knows, right? Like, this is still dealing with a great unknown. And this is yet another team where I kind of hope they don't pigeonhole Jerry Jeudy to just being a kind of slot only player as the previous Denver coaching staff has. Like, I think he makes the ideal flanker receiver that you can move around pre-snap and get him some inside looks every now and again. But I think this is a offensive system, Nathaniel Hackett coming over from Green Bay, that kind of wants a lot of huff, a lot of size in their slot receiver position. I think Tim Patrick would be a great fit there.
Yeah, and Tim Patrick, you didn't touch on, he's another guy, kind of a mixed results, I noticed that on reception perception. Feels like he's like the community's kind of favorite now because he's the cheapest while everyone's, you know, trying to stack Russell Wilson. But Cortland Sutton, it bore out. Like, we talk about targets being earned and like a win rate. And like you talked about in the open of the show, we did about how like we can't use yards for target and stuff to really diagnose the success of these players. But at least guys like Terry McLaurin, when you see like a low yards for targets, I'm like, you're seeing the targets earned, right? Like, he's open. Yes. But like Cortland Sutton, the final 11 games last year match everything you said. He had 45 targets over the final 11 games. I mean, if you're not open, you ain't getting the football. That kind of bore out in the results. And he's a guy that's gotten a ton of steam as the summer's gone on. I mean, he's going like wide receiver, like 15 to 18 range now, which feels very aggressive. I feel like you would want to have some more trepidation, you know, put him more on like the Mike Williams path of like, you know, well, we know where the success can lie, but do we want to invest yet? Like, you know, maybe there's that kind of jump, but we're definitely paying top dollar there. The next team I want to talk about is the Chiefs. You traded a guy we talked about in the open of the show, Tyreek Hill. This offense is going to be very different than the offenses we've seen the Kansas City Chiefs run because you're removing one of our, obviously the most unique player, arguably at the wide receiver position, Tyreek Hill. We've seen one guy get kind of expensive in Juju Smith-Schuster, and he's where I want to kind of start off with because really, you know, the excitement for Juju is, hey, he's only going to be 26 years old in November. He's already given us one wide receiver, one type season very early in his career. How much was just, do we just write off on Ben Roethlisberger the past years? Now he's playing with Patrick Mahomes. We don't really know what Marquise Valdes-Scantling is, but like, what kind of player is Juju Smith-Schuster right now? Like, what are we getting from like the type of where he wins and where kind of we can have success with Juju Smith-Schuster on the football field?
I feel like Juju has gone from being by far the most overrated receiver in the NFL coming out of like his, you know, 2019 season, 2018 season, probably 2018 season. This was weird. Like by far the most overrated receiver in the NFL when he was like a top five dynasty pick consensus to probably pretty super underrated at this point. He's a big slot receiver. That's who he is. Like he look at his profile and reception perception, never been good against press coverage, never been good against man coverage, but he's been a great zone beater in just about every single season he's been sampled. And that's including last year in an injury shortened year, 82.6% success rate for zone. That's not exciting, but it's, you can make a lot of big play. You can make a lot of big plays in the right offense. Like Rich, I'm not going to say Juju's going to lead the NFL and, you know, catches, yards and touchdowns, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's quote this year's Cooper Kupp, right? Like a guy that we know has an established resume. Now he's not coming like with the same momentum that Cooper Kupp is. He's obviously changing teams, but he's getting a huge quarterback upgrade. Like I have no respect for what Ben Roethlisberger put on the field the last 2 years. Like you talk about yards per target, anything like that. I'm throw all of that in the garbage with all of these Steelers players because it just was like laughable quarterback play from Ben Roethlisberger the last couple of seasons. Huge quarterback upgrade, obviously, to Patrick Mahomes. I think he is going to probably I would imagine he's going to still play as like a big slot receiver as Juju. So he's going to get a lot of those same routes. I think this is probably the first time ever I'll be really excited about like where Juju is going to go in fantasy drafts and what I'd project for him and the role that he's playing in particularly, because he's still not going to be, I mean, he's not going to be asked to fight to punch above his weight as a player. Mm-hmm. I don't think. I mean, they'll have other guys there that they can play outside. Travis Kelce lines up as an X receiver at sometimes too. So I think it's a pretty interesting landing spot for Juju. And the more I've thought about him, and the more I think about how I'm in on this archetype of players, the Cooper Kupps, the Amon-Ra St. Browns, the Chris Godwins, I think Juju does fit in that archetype a little bit.
Now, he got one of the shorter-term contracts that we just talked about, not the Allen Robinson contract, more yes. of a kind of like, let's see where we are. And they invested in a player that a lot of people liked coming into the draft in Sky Moore. I'm very curious your take, not to go all the way back to like April and rookie takes, but Sky Moore, not him destroying, you know, the Mac cornerbacks, but envision for Sky Moore in the NFL, because you got Juju in this big slot role. Do we see Sky Moore as a player that can play that kind of X if Juju's already playing the big slot for at least 2022? Or do we think Sky Moore is a guy we're going to have to wait on a year? Do you think that there's a roadblock there, or do you think he's going to be able to win immediately in the NFL playing outside?
Yeah, this is sort of a can't lose situation for me here, because like if Juju is thwarted by Sky Moore, Sky Moore is one of my favorite. He was like one of my favorite prospects in last year's class. I love Sky Moore. You mentioned obviously like from a RP standpoint, he thumped all of those defenders. The guys that he was playing against was, you know, number one or two in success rate versus man zone and press coverage, which is great. Like I think I get this question about level competition a lot, but I don't really want to sit there and say like, wow, Sky Moore had a higher success rate versus man than Jamison Williams. He's clearly better. Well, there's a difference in level of competition, but you can compare that within an individual player's profile. Mm-hmm. And I think the skills that Sky Moore showed as a collegiate player would lend me to believe that, just similar with, like, again, different levels of competition, but Elijah Moore great against man press coverage as a prospect coming in. Not, I don't think they're the same type of player, but I do think that, like, Sky Moore can play outside. I had the same feeling about Elijah Moore coming to the NFL too, based on those success rates. And I feel like similarly with Sky Moore, yeah, it can go the same way. I just have questions about how soon he'll be ramped up. You know, he's a second round rookie coming from a lower level of competition. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown that people get excited about as a sleeper in the offseason, but it kind of takes till November, December for him to get rolling.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And as much as people want to get the ghost of Mecole Hardman, you know, kind of out of there, I mean, you look at, they kind of found the last half of last season like a really great role for Mecole Hardman. And he turned in a ton of really usable big plays and like chunk plays for the offense. And he's just not going to completely go away. They're not going to uncork that either. So definitely a unique dynamic. I also think the Chiefs are definitely, they've really kind of signaled us to us too. Like, they're going to run the football this year a little bit, you know, especially if teams want to come out and, you know, and still kind of, you know, play like them too high. And again, because it's not all Tyreek, you know, a lot is still Patrick Mahomes, and kind of prevent big plays. I mean, they've got a really great offensive line. They get just a pure runner in Ronald Jones, and, you know, involved. I know a lot of people don't like Ronald Jones, but he's pretty good at when they just hand the football off to him. He's always been productive, and that's what the Chiefs are going to ask him to do. The last spot is the turnover in Green Bay, and I don't know if there's just not like a player here like anyone's like really locked in on, you know, in terms of like a talent. I think that most people are kind of like, you know, just finding either almost a, I don't want to call him a lesser of evil. It's just like, you know, this is the best of a bunch. And, you know, I saw, you know, you had to do it. I mean, you know, I'm sure your Discord was lighting up. You know, Alan Lazard is one of these guys, though, that, like, if he doesn't score a touchdown, like, we've got some questions, right? And then we had Christian Watson, a player, again, FCS player. We got some questions. And then, you know, guys like Randall Cobb, they had Sammy Watkins. What do we have here with this hodgepodge of guys the Packers have chosen to kind of throw at the wall here in the absence of Devontae Adams now?
I mean, it's just the weirdest wide receiver room probably in the league right now. You mentioned Christian Watson, like, unlike Sky Moore, not lighting up his lower level of competition. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's even lower. That North Dakota State offense is something else, man. I'll tell you that. But it's this is a group I feel like nobody's going to be over 800 yards. Everybody will be between like 500 and 700 in terms of this receiver room, and probably even Bob Tonyan in there too. I don't feel very confident in anybody in this receiver room. I think Alan Lazard fits nicely he does some kind of tight endish stuff for them too. For the Green Bay Packers, like, I think he's an interesting bigger slot receiver if that's the way they go with him. But God, Rich, everybody on this roster is like a slot player. Randall Cobb, yep. Amari Rodgers, even they've got like three guys that should probably be playing on the inside. I'm not sure Amari Rodgers is going to do anything after the rookie year that he had, but still, you know, it's like they're going to have Sammy Watkins and Christian Watson duke it out outside. Romeo Dubs, maybe. I don't know. I offer no clarity on this particular wide receiver because I'm not super bullish on anybody that's there.
But that is still saying something. I mean, we've seen Alan Lazard's ADP rise over the course of the summer. And, you know, most people just say, I don't know if it's a level of confidence in Lazard to just say, like, well, if some, like, I think more people are just saying, well, if someone were to do it, it would be him. You know, I keep going back to a couple years ago with Aaron Rodgers, and, you know, obviously he's reeled off the back-to-back MVPs, and, you know, he was just absolutely torn down the stretch last year. But I keep going back to like 2018 and 2019, where he was still like a pretty good player, but like the fantasy community and like NFL, even NFL people were trying to get, like, you started to hear the whispers like, is Aaron Rodgers overrated? I just wonder if he's going to go back to having like one of those types of seasons where he's still like solid, but because of the cachet he's built up as a player, you know, his career, people end up being a little disappointed. And you start to see, you see that reflected with the Packers offense in totality in from a fantasy football stance, except for Aaron Jones. He's like the only Packer that's like continuously moved up. And like, you know, Lazard's moved up a little bit. People are still treating him as a wide receiver four. You know, and you kind of see it reflected even in Aaron Rodgers. And it kind of feels like, I wonder if we won't have like a 2019 Patriots, like Tom Brady type season due to the talent that's there. But like, it feels like it could be a situation where like Rodgers throws like 28 touchdowns and people are like, oh, like we're doing, you know, like one of those type of deals. I don't know if we'll get that, but we'll see.
I mean, it's obviously there's been like a lot of consternation about, you know, Devontae Adams, like leaving Aaron Rodgers, but Devontae Adams is the best receiver in football, period. Like, I think it's not really something you can debate over the the way he's played over the last 2 years from an individual standpoint. I mean, I think it's him and Stephon Diggs, and then the argument stops in terms of like the best route runners in the NFL. And I think Adams is just a little more proven, I think, than Diggs. And I mean, I'm the biggest Stephon Diggs backer on planet Earth, but I just think like Devontae Adams is the best receiver in football, period. End of discussion, based on what he's done the last like 4 years, really. That's a huge loss for Aaron Rodgers. Like, I don't care if you are Aaron Rodgers, you're the back-to-back MVP. I think the inverse of that relationship is just as like problematic. And the fact that they don't have like, I mean, they better sign like a Julio Jones type or something like that. And I mean, Julio is like a guy that I want to chart for RP, but don't want to waste my time in case he just doesn't sign anywhere. I think he'll probably sign somewhere, but he'll sign somewhere. Right. And then I should be ahead of schedule. I should be ahead of the curve.
That's right, man. You got time to get on it.
I got time, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, Ryan McChrystal, who works for us at the site, has really kind of highlighted how the fact that Devontae Adams, you know, where he wins and he can win so quick in the quick game really kind of mitigates some of the disastrous elements of that offensive line. Like, yeah, you know, it kind of combats a little bit of how bad their offensive line is on paper, because now you have Devontae Adams and Hunter Renfrow, two guys that can just decimate in the quick game. And hey, if the ball's coming out fast, like these guys are going to be open. And then you add Darren Waller to that too. So I think that's an interesting, you know, kind of element to kind of pair. Because, you know, one of the concerns I have every time I go back to the Raiders, I'm like, Jesus, this offensive line is trash. They didn't do anything to like combat this. And, you know, Ryan was like, no, they did do something to combat it. Not the player that's on the offensive line, but with, you know, the best wide receiver in the NFL. We're getting to shot clock here. Like I said, we wrap up. We get long-winded. I do want to give you a kind of an open window. Is there any receiver that I haven't brought up that you just kind of want to get a take out there? I know a lot of people have done they want to probably hear your take on Gabriel Davis or whatever, but like, I want to know a player that Matt Harmon wants to talk about. Do we have one of those?
I think the guy I want to talk about, and it's funny, like you mentioned, I've been making the podcast rounds, I've been out there, you know, stuff like that. The guy I talked about every podcast that I was on last year and, you know, really have not been asked about at all this year is Brandon Ayuk. And I'm still like 100% optimistic on Brandon Ayuk. Like, I just want to tell people that like weeks 1 through 7, when there was clearly some stuff going on between him and the coaching staff. And, you know, that information's wasn't out there last year. Thanks a lot on that, but wasn't out there going into last season until basically like kickoff happened. But that was pretty much like, you know, he even talked about that him and the coaches have had some words, stuff like that. You know, he starts blocking his ass off in the first couple of weeks once he starts playing more snaps, and then just got more and more work. Like, I basically want to tell people weeks 1 through 7, just throw that in the trash. If you forget about that, like, he was the player that I expected him to be last year. Like, obviously, like I've said this a couple of times, I 0% regret being as excited as I was about Brandon Ayuk last year, because I think I nailed that player evaluation. I just wish I'd been more optimistic about Deebo Samuel, obviously, for, you know, a lot of different reasons. I wish I just ignored his 2020 which clearly I've said about Rondale Moore earlier, clearly like an injury marred season. But I still think Brandon Ayuk is a rocket ship ascending player, and a guy that I think could be unlocked more with Trey Lance coming to the offense, because Ayuk wins outside the numbers. Ayuk wins on those deep routes. Like, those just were never going to be a part of the equation with Jimmy G there. And like, Jimmy, you know, God love him, sometimes good, sometimes bad, will rifle the ball, and he's pretty good at this, will rifle the ball in zone coverage to dig routes to Deebo Samuel. But like, I think he's not a guy that's going to push the ball down the field outside the numbers to Brandon Ayuk. And I think there's just a lot of there's a lot of good left in Ayuk's career, and I would tell people to continue to keep the faith on that player.
Listen, Dynasty, so if you got a chance to go grab him, you know, the discounted in your drafts as well this summer. Matthew Harmon, the great Matthew Harmon. Let everyone know again where they can find the work, what they can expect. If you have anything going on, feel free. Take this moment, plug the stuff.
I appreciate you, Rich. And yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB and receptionperception.com. I think you'll love it if you sign up. It's just a ton. If you're into data, like there's a ton of data there that I chart every single year. I put a lot of time into it. And then there's a ton of other features there as well. If you like Dynasty, I've got Dynasty wide receiver rankings. I mentioned the projections. My tiers will be up on the site too. There's a ton of other features, but the blood and guts goes into the charting work, the player profiles, and the sortable data tables. I think you'll love it if you want to check it out.
Real quick, shout out the guy who does the actual route tree graphics, which I think are phenomenal.
So a buddy of mine that works at Yahoo with me, Michael Wagstaff, was the one who designed it and came up with it. And I think it was an awesome job by him. He's done a couple of other graphic stuff for me on the site, designed the logo. He's the man, dude. Wags is awesome. One of the just straight up coolest guys I know too, and I pretty much don't like anybody, so that says a lot. So yeah, Wags is a man. Really appreciate him doing that. Michael Wagstaff, shout out to him. And then you know, I've got somebody. This is one of the smartest things. If you're starting your own side project, find out the things that you can get off your plate. Like I haven't done one of the route charts in years, basically, because I got somebody who like plugs the info in for me, and Wag set it up really well for any basically numbskull to do it.
Unsung hero, Michael Wagstaff. There you have it.
Shout out.
Yep. Get that shout out. It was awesome. It was a pleasure. There you have it, everybody. Just a plethora, smorgasbord of wide receiver information that is useful, I believe, for the rest of this summer. Thank you again, Matt Harmon. Again, everybody, check out the book, the 2022 Sharp Football Preview book. Check it in the description. Check it on the website. Go get that. I'm going on vacation next week. Pizzuta will be here, everyone. So enjoy that and enjoy the words of Dan Pizzuta and Ryan next week. I'll be back after vacation. See you later.